Hey, what's up, folks? Welcome back to On Texas Football, and welcome to another edition of our Wednesday night live stream. Hey, UT boy, early on in the building. My man, Bobby Bird, of course, joining us, as well as CJ Vogel. I'm Lifetime Longhorn, Rod Barrett. Well, we're all Lifetime Longhorns, so let me throw it out there. Lifetime Longhorns here, joining you for the Wednesday night live stream. Throw it out there. Hey, thank you, Rob. Thank you for coming out. For everybody who was at the, just throwing it out there first and foremost, guys, everybody who was hanging out at Posse East, it was a great event. Had a little meet and greet out there. It organized by my man Bobby, did a great job organizing it, but all the fans that showed up, it was great, man. It really had a family atmosphere. Felt like a community. That's what we want. Want this thing to be a group, a community. And it really did make my day meeting all of you guys in person. Can't name everybody, but you guys were fantastic. Had a great time. Wish you could have went on longer. We will do it again. Right, Bobby? We will do that again.
That's going to be fun. We'll make that an annual thing, hopefully. And more people will be able to come out and join us. To y'all point, to Rod's point, that just made my night a little bit, made my afternoon, seeing everybody out there. And then just being able to talk a little bit of Longhorn football, knowing that we're 3 days away from spring ball or spring game, makes it a little bit more exciting as well. I want to thank some of our sponsors that came out, Joe Brown from Southside Bank Mortgage, Mark Saunders from Allstate Insurance, local agent here in Round Rock and Austin, and then Jeff Clark from 40 Acres Collection also stopped by as well. And also want to say thank you to the owner of the Posse East JV for allowing us to use that venue. He is really, really nice as well. So I hope everybody enjoyed themselves. I gave some free magazines away for folks, for that sort of stuff. So hope everybody had fun. It's a lot of nice meeting people.
Yeah, no, that was a great time there. CJ, you were out there as well. So CJ, I'll give you the floor as well, because I know you had a great time. You stayed. I think you closed it down. I left. CJ was still out there. So CJ's young. He's still out there having a good time. CJ, were you the last one out there of the group?
Hey, I stuck around a little bit. I had to say goodbye to Bobby, you know, of course, seeing what was going on. It was a fun time. We had a blast, of course, getting to meet some of the OTF OGs, you know, out in out in the wild. It was a good time. And I'm really looking forward to meeting more of y'all out at the spring game this Saturday. Rain or shine, we'll be up there. Ready for whatever goes our way when it comes to Texas football. So really cool today. Of course, looking forward to it this weekend. And, of course, this fall should be a really good time getting to meet more of y'all as we get, you know, a little bit of a routine going here with On Texas Football.
No doubt, no doubt. We continue to grow just because of you guys. So we can't thank you guys enough. All right, of course, we're going to talk a lot of spring game on today's show, today's live stream. We're also getting to the transfer portal. It giveth and it taketh away. The Longhorns are dealing with that right now. Hell, Longhorn men's basketball, also the Longhorn Longhorns football team is dealing with it as well. So transfer portal window open to the 30th. We'll talk about the departures on the 40 acres, but also possible acquisitions for the Longhorns via the transfer portal. We also will get into Tavondre Sweat. Tavondre Sweat's draft stock right now seems to be dropping. And Dane Brugler apparently had an interesting nugget that he threw out there about Tavondre Sweat that I want to talk about a little bit. We'll get into that too. Any comments from Sark's media availability that we also want to reflect on, at least one that I want to bring up, we'll also dive into that. And of course, your questions, your comments, whatever you guys got, your super chats, throw them to the front of the line. We'll answer those and address those as well. But let's start, gentlemen, with the transfer portal. Another Longhorn football player expects to hit the transfer portal, or at least reportedly hitting the transfer portal, Jamon Tapp. So now at that edge position, you have two players, Billy Walton and Jamon Tapp, on that edge rusher position. Makes sense, right? Because you stockpiled a lot of talent there. You upgraded there. You brought in Trey Moore, natural pass rusher. You brought in Colin Simmons, who's a prodigy there. You still got Ethan Burke. You still got Baron Cyril. Justin Finkley is a guy that played over 300 snaps for you last year. He is still in the mix. The path to play with those guys seems very, very slim. And I think maybe that's why those guys, who both were really talented players, and I think Longhorn fans, I actually saw some disappointment on social media from Longhorn fans with the loss of Jamon Tapp, because I think the expectations were high for him. What are your thoughts? I'll give it to you first, CJ, about the loss of Jamon Tapp at that edge rusher position.
Yeah, of course, Longhorn fans certainly took a liking to Jamon Tapp after his appearance at the All-American Bowl down in San Antonio. You know, you put the camera in front of his face, and he gave you exact reasons why he decided he wanted to leave the Deep South down in Louisiana and come up to Texas for his college career. Of course, he gave us a great quote: "Texas has everything. If you want it all, come to Texas." That certainly still rings true for a number of guys that end up at Texas, but certainly became a fan favorite as a result. When it comes to the way that I look at departures so far, this where Texas is when guys are departing from the portal, a lot of it is with positions right now that have returning starters. And so, Rod, you mentioned that defensive end room right now. You know, you have Baron Sorrell, you have Ethan Burke coming back. Those two figure to be a top of the list, at least in the spring, for, you know, your top end, reps right now. And then, of course, you go out and you add five-star Colin Simmons and Zena Umeozulu, Trey Moore out of the portal. And, of course, you get a healthy Colton Vosick. It just gets very crowded atop of that defensive edge spot. You look at Peyton Kirkland. Of course, right now, Texas very healthy on the offensive line. Was he going to crack the two deep this year? Probably not. And so fighting back from injury, understanding where he was in the depth chart, it makes sense for him to want to venture into the portal. And, of course, Samaje Burrell as well. You have a six-year guy, David Benda. You have a returning starter in Anthony Hill. Leon Goufal's made leaps. Of course, the off-the-field didn't help him either. But now you're looking at guys who are looking at getting on the field early and not having a path right away, starting to understand, all right, maybe it's not at Texas that I will be making my college football impact, which is okay because, again, Texas at the moment, you're not feeling anything by these portal entries at the moment. Could you? Sure. You know, we still have 2 weeks essentially for this portal window to create some casualties from the Texas roster. But at the moment, I think Texas is still sitting very, very healthily in their depth chart from a position outlook.
Yep. No, I agree. It almost feels like a healthy type of attrition. Attrition is inevitable in the transfer portal era. Every program is going to have attrition, but there's a healthy type of attrition where it doesn't leave a hole on your roster or a void in your roster necessarily. And I think there's unhealthy attrition where, man, it leaves a gaping hole in your roster. It's like, man, that guy's going. This guy's one of your best players, the most impactful players. And Bobby,
Rod, it's not 30 guys like A&M, you know, coming and going in a single semester. I have a slightly different take on it than CJ. I think that both of those guys, Tapp and Walton, were guys that would play a lot more next year, might play a little this year, right? And so that being said, they didn't have the patience for it. Now, Walton, I will say this, Walton told the coaches and his parents told the coaches, everybody, that it's my understanding that he was coming back last week. He changed his mind on Monday. And so the thought process is that Billy Walton was going to play this year, see some time, be a key piece of the depth in the Longhorn locker room and on the field, and then just changed his mind. To CJ's point, some guys change their mind, right? And some guys need to go make their mark somewhere else. Tapp's a little bit different. Tapp had a lot of talent, one of the more talented guys on the roster, but the position just never came together for him yet. And he's 1 year older than Billy Walton, right? So he's 3 years, whereas Walton's just 2 years. And so, Rod, you know this. I mean, the clock is ticking on those guys.
It is, man.
A little bit. And so when you look at those two, I agree with a lot of what was said by CJ in particular about how all that fits and why whether it's Trey Moore coming in or Colin Simmons' arrival or the return of both Ethan Burke and Baron Sorrell and Justice Finkley, all of them, right?
Yeah.
There is a log jam of sorts and a talented one. But I think there's a little bit difference. And I would also say that Kirkland right now, he wasn't managing not just the two deep, but he was having problems finding the three deep right now. And Burrell, I think that attrition, even though I think he may have been going in the portal regardless, CJ is nodding his head because he and I had heard the same thing, right? Before his issue with the DUI or whatever he's charged with. I think he was headed that way either. It wasn't that. He just got Leonga LaFau was ahead of him. And same year, same position as a backup, Rod. So it's not just starters. It's not just these little things. I mean, there's a lot of mix. There's Rod, you've been on a football team. You know exactly. There's guys that do stuff for – you don't really know all of the reasons.
No.
But I do not think – in my opinion at least, that Texas is seeing some, like, mass exodus. To CJ's point and your point, Rod, it's controlled. Or not controlled. It's within range.
Yes.
It's within range, I guess is the best way to put it.
Yeah, and they all make sense. Right, they all are like, oh well, yeah. Look at that position. Look at their path to play. It all kind of does make sense. It's not one that's shocking. It's like, man, I didn't expect that. And then you have to try to psychoanalyze what the player is thinking. We know what these guys are thinking. Most of them is like, man, I don't have a path to play right now, and I want to play. And like you said, Bobby, they're losing patience. And it's weird. I mean, in some positions we're seeing patience with players willing to, you know, kind of sit and cultivate, transform their bodies, work on their craft. Running back is probably the most, the biggest example of that and the most successful example of it. And I think they're trying to cultivate that and replicate it with other positions where, you know, you do have guys who watch the path of a guy like a linebacker. I think you could get some of that where you watch the Jalen Ford, you watch an Overshown there, and seeing some of these younger guys, and maybe they're willing to see. It's like, no, I saw the path. I sat behind that guy. I studied under Jalen Ford and Overshown, two NFL guys. And now I can see now what it takes. I know the work that needs to be put in, the commitment to it. And I can see myself actually going down that very same path. So I think running back has that. Maybe they're trying to get that in some other positions. Real quick question here. We got a lot of questions coming, so just keep them throwing them out there. We'll hit as many of them as we can. We'll hit all of them, I promise. We'll jump to all those questions. Daniel Earp here with a super chat. And like I said, super chats, you can jump to the front of the line and disrupt the show anytime you want to. Thank you very much, Daniel. We appreciate that. Outside of edge and O-line, this is something I wanted to get into. Which position group sees the most attrition in the portal? Do we see another position that we can, you know, see similar type of healthy attrition because you have upgraded at that position and then there is a tough path to play for some of the young guys and maybe they will grow impatient? Do we see that at any other position potentially?
Let me ask CJ this question. Let's even take this a little. CJ, do you see another position on the field where you think there might be two more guys hit the portal? I can tell you right now, Rod, me and CJ had talked about this morning. That's why I wanted to ask him this follow-up question, is because he and I know of a DB that's likely to hit the portal. But I don't know if there's two.
Right.
And so you get that, but you don't – it doesn't mean that position's going to be rated, so to speak.
Yeah.
Maybe offensive line still offensive has two line left?
That's
maybe.
What I was
thinking about. Maybe.
Yeah. O-line may have one more.
Yeah.
So the question, I mean, are there multiple transfers from a single position that's not offensive line or the edge, in which we've already seen two and one with Peyton Kirkland on the O-line? Right now, I don't think so. I think right now with what you're seeing, at least the way that, you know, the linebacking group is set up, the defensive backs, the corners, you know, a lot of these guys who are on campus right now are either – expecting to be in the rotation very heavily this fall, or they're brand new. And so I think that's a reason that you can expect to see some guys stick around despite not seeing the field this year. Of course, with your defensive backs, you lost six to the portal alone. So you had to bring in a number of bodies. That gives you leeway to build some trust with the staff and understanding that, yeah, you might not be on the field yet, but your time is coming because we put that faith in you, and that's why you're here. That's why we brought you to Texas, because we see, you know, the signs of you becoming a big-time player down the road. That allows you to have a longer leash a little bit with the new guys. Of course, on the offensive side of the ball, offensive line, I mean, I know we mentioned that, Bobby. Peyton Kirkland was the first. There's still probably a name or two out there that we're keeping a close eye on right now. But I don't see another spot, maybe running back, where you see another guy go. Wide receiver, again, a lot of new faces, 7 of the 10, brand new to the 40 acres this year. So I don't know. I don't think you see a whole lot on that side if it's not the offensive line.
Yeah, and I think to Rod's point, it's single digit. I mean, I say single digit, it's one finger.
Yes,
positions. You know, it's not. And so if Daniel's asking that question, my response is, I don't know at least the scuttlebutt behind the scenes, from what we know and have heard, it doesn't feel like it's headed in that direction. Could something happen that changes direction? Yes. I wouldn't be it wouldn't shock me if that happened. But right now, I'm not hearing of anything that just goes, oh, this position's going to get, you know, butchered in the portal.
Yeah.
So to your point, that's really what I think he's getting at is like, we need to be worried about something else major going on from a attrition standpoint. I just don't think so. I still have my number at 6-8 overall, and we're at 4.
Yeah.
So maybe 4 more, and it could go higher than that. I'm not, you know, I think CJ, you were at 7.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's what we're really talking about here.
With these 4, Texas is sitting at that 85 number. Yep. And so, of course, the more that you start evaluating what enters the portal, how much enters the portal, what Texas wants to target from the portal, that also then depends, you know, a little bit more on who departs, or does Sarkisian and the staff make some a little bit more serious conversations with players on the roster. That'll be interesting. Of course, you know, names are still filing, and I think we hit the 1,000 name total in the portal just, you know, a day or two after it opened up. So names will continue to file in. We got, you know, 13 more days of this free agency madness in the portal. So we'll see just what comes up. Of course, a big name, and not to segue too quickly here, Rod, but Bill Norton will be on campus this weekend. The Arizona defensive tackle portaler will be on campus this weekend for the spring game. He, of course, played alongside Tia Savea and under Johnny Nansen as the Arizona defensive coordinator a year ago.
Hey, by all means, CJ, take it that way, because Aloha Traveler actually wants to go in that direction. Says, Aloha, fellas. It is realistic that Texas grabs 2 more D tackles in this portal window. What other positions besides D tackle could Texas shock us all and add a player? Can't say punter. Please don't say punter.
I can't say punter.
Yeah, don't say punter. Aloha Traveler wants to know, is it possible Texas grabs 2 more D tackles, interior D linemen, in this portal window? And besides the D tackle position, which we all know is a glaring position of need for Texas, could they surprise us? Any other position out there that Texas could potentially target in the transfer portal? Thank you, Aloha Traveler. Thank you very much for the super chat. We appreciate it. And I wish I was where you were.
Texas is going to sign at least 2 defensive tackles in the portal.
So you think they do get 2? Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, at least 2. And
Bill Norton going to be one of these guys? Bill Norton.
I think it's very, very likely that Bill Norton is one of those guys. CJ, you were a little demure about this. CJ broke the news that Bill Norton was going to be on campus. He did it about 7:45 this morning. I don't know if you got that. That's Arizona's 2 hours ahead. CJ, is he texting you at 3:30 in the morning or something?
He did. He actually did. Yeah.
So Bill Norton's going to be on campus. And I do think that looks very promising for the Longhorns, is my understanding at this point. And, you know, another guy that we need to mention right now is Dominic Williams, defensive tackle out of TCU. It's alleged that he's going into the portal. I've been told that Texas would be very interested in him. He's also talking to Oklahoma, and I think USC is going to be interested there. But he is more – Norton is that guy that switches back and forth between a 3 technique and a 0 technique. He's a little bit of a nose, a little bit of a defensive tackle. Played more nose or more A-gap, 1 technique, I guess, than 3 this year, according to CJ stats. But the point being, that's one of them. I think Dominic Williams could be another, and I don't think that they're done, even if they get those 2, because I think they want a couple of, or at least 1 true nose tackle. Dominic Williams would be a huge one. It's my understanding he's trying, that OU is trying to get him up to their spring game this weekend. Texas trying to get him in as well. He's originally from the state of California, Southern California, and so Texas has some ties there that are trying to be worked. But I think that there's a defensive lineman at UCLA that if he were going to the portal, Texas would be interested in. If a defensive tackle from Michigan went in the portal, Texas would be immediately interested in. I think they've done their homework on those guys and are waiting to see if that happens. But Rod, I would tell Aloha Travel, I feel very confident Texas is going to sign 2 defensive tackles in the portal. Nice. And if there is a third position, if there is another position, it's going to be a guy that they think is a, this is how I, a difference maker. Hmm. Now, is that Cormani McClain, a corner out of Colorado? I don't think so. I think they would take, maybe it's a receiver that has 100 catches. I mean, I know they've already got taken three receivers, but I'm trying to give you guys
the, yeah, yeah,
the idea of what they're trying to think about. Maybe it's a linebacker that had 120 tackles. They want a, if they're going to go at another position, because they feel good about their roster right now.
Yeah.
Understanding. If they're going to go another position, they're going to go big.
Oh, a game changer. A game changer.
A big game hunting.
Yeah, big game hunting. I got you.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, Rob. Yeah. Yeah. So I don't see, other than that, I don't know that Texas has a lot of needs.
No, that's good. It does say that, and I don't know if they're desperate, but there's a sense of urgency about bringing in possible solutions at interior D-line. So maybe what they've seen this spring, they still haven't seen enough that gives them confidence that this group is going to be able to stabilize itself if they bring in two. But I like that idea. I love, hey, if you're sorry, hey man, leave no doubt. Do whatever is within your means to try to fill that hole on your roster, because you do have that now, that resource via the transfer portal. So I would like that. So there you go. Nice breakdown there. And thank you guys for the super chat. Thank you guys for all the questions. We'll get to some more of your questions here in just a second. But first, I do want to thank one of our fantastic sponsors. You guys know about the Autograph app. And if you don't know about the Autograph app, then you're going to learn a lot about it right now, because we're all pumped, of course, for the game in Arbor coming up in Michigan. As a matter of fact, I met some Longhorn fans at our meet and greet who actually are going to that Michigan game. So they're really pumped about it. Would you like a chance to win $4 tickets to the Big House this fall against Michigan in honor of the four national championships? Texas has won, hopefully going to get five of those. But that's what we're breaking down here on Texas Football. These tickets are retailing for about $600+. So if you want to get those bargain tickets at $4, you got to listen up. And here's how you do it. Our partner at Autograph, they're dropping a pair of tickets on April 18th at 2 p.m. Central Standard Time. All right. They're going to be dropping those in their app. All you need to do is download the app and refer one friend successfully. All right. And then you'll get a chance to be eligible to win those tickets. Now you have until April 18th, 11 a.m. All right. They're going to drop those tickets in their app at 2 p.m. April 18th, but you got until 11 a.m. on April 18th. If you refer a friend successfully, you will be eligible. For those that are not new, that are not familiar with the Autograph app, it is where real Longhorn fans get unreal rewards by bringing fan content and communities into one place. Autograph is the first app that recognizes and rewards fans, turning their passion into access and experiences. Co-founded by Tom Brady on the belief that devotion should be rewarded and the future of fandom belongs to the fans. Scan to download the free Autograph app in your Apple App Store and use the referral code on Texas. That's the referral code on Texas. Join us and see where your fandom takes you, hopefully Ann Arbor this fall, with $4 tickets from the Autograph app. Thank you very much to the folks over at the Autograph app. All right. One with the super chat here, just as for Bobby, says, Bobby, I met AJ Abrams yesterday at my work. Great person, respectful. He's a broker in real estate. Also told me when Frank Haith left for Miami, Frank tried to get him to Miami. There you go. Nice little nugget there. Like that.
Hey, Rod.
You won.
You know, look, you got to thank you for the super chat. I have no doubt that college coaches try to get other guys to follow him. I mean, look, AJ though was, I mean, that would be a rare one, right? AJ was a Round Rock guy. I mean, he wasn't from, you know, he wasn't coming in from, I don't know, you know, mouth of Wilson, Virginia with all those academy guys or something like that, or Fork Union. He was from Round Rock. What was he going to go do in Miami? Now he's back here in Austin, a real estate agent. Good for him.
Yeah.
Right. Coaches do that, man. I was talking to somebody tonight or earlier this afternoon about it. A guy that listens to the show came out, and he's been in the athletic departments at Texas. He, as a student, he was working for doing some volunteer stuff, then worked at A&M, worked at South Florida, worked at Tennessee. And he and I were talking about, once they put on that other color, they're all about the other color. It's whoever you're paying. whoever you're getting your paycheck from, that's who you better be rooting for. Because people are gonna do it, and that's all Frank Haith was doing. That's all any of these coaches do.
Hey, I love all the coaches. Mack Brown, a great man, great coach, just a saint of a human being. Me and Mack had our issues, but I'll never say a bad word about Mack, man. Mack's a great person. We disagreed on some other stuff. But I'll say this, and I always said about coaches, they're paid for their loyalty. God bless them. They're good at their caretakers of their program, and I'm glad they are, you know, that they take responsibility and they want to make sure the program is in a good place, but they're paid for their loyalty. Best thing about fans are not paid for their loyalty. And fans put up a lot of money. They spend money to show their loyalty. That's always say that's the biggest difference. That's the in terms of what matters to a program, always remember that. Coaches are paid for their loyalty, but not the fans. So anytime a coach starts dogging the fans, say, man, you want to watch that. All right, because they stop paying you. You know what? You're gonna stop throwing them horns up as soon as that paycheck stops. I guarantee you that. All right, Mac ain't throwing the horns up in a long time. I love him. that's the reality of it. You know what I mean? That's the reality of it.
Yeah, to your point, Rod. Whenever Texas A&M early on hired Tim Brewster, you know the station was hot. If you remember those tweets,
it was lit.
It's lit.
It's lit.
You see all the emojis right behind it. I know a lot of Longhorn fans at the time was like, wait a minute. Tim Brewster's saying this. Wait.
It was lit in Austin back in the day, man.
Exactly to your point.
That's a great point. Tim Brewster recruited me too, man. That guy is a mercenary. He's damn good at what he does. But Tim Brewster is a mercenary. But that's all good. It used to be that players weren't paid for their loyalty, but now, those days are done. We're past those days now. And you know what? Thank God we're past those days. I wish I was playing these days. All right. But I would still be loyal. But, you know, it means even more when you get a guy like Rojo these days. It's like, no, I'm still loyal. Or a guy like, you know, Jay Witt, those kind
of guys. David Bender. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. Though it means a little bit more. Not everybody's going to do it. And hey, I'm not knocking them. Go make your money. It's a free market. But it means a little bit more. And those guys like, no, man, I choose Texas. Even I can go somewhere. I always choose Texas. All right. Good conversation there. We'll get to a question here because I think it's a good one. It'll lead us into a conversation about Texas and how this roster is going to match up in the SEC, which I think is really good. But I want to make sure we finish up the conversation about the transfer portal departures and the transfer portal acquisitions. Did we say if there's any other position that did we state that there's any other position that Texas would pursue, or we just your theory is that it's just going to be a game changer, a big game, whatever, big time player, somebody who's going to come in and can kind of transform the phase of the game that they're coming in on.
Yes, and one that I think with the exception of punter, Rod. Like, because the Aloha Traveler said, except punter. You can't
pick that one.
Yeah, but defensive tackle, punter. You know, there was some talk early on. They might look at linebacker. I don't think they've revisited that at this time. Did that change? I don't know.
But that's kind of what I was going to it, actually. I wanted to go there because Doug has a really good question here. And I like the question. Doug Haywood here with a good question. Say, good evening, gentlemen. Do you feel like our linebackers are big enough to play in the SEC? Why can't Texas recruit linebackers that are college ready in size and develop them along the way? I'll just say this. I remarked earlier on one of the previous live streams that I was really intrigued by that competition at that off-ball linebacker opposite Anthony Hill, because the body types, the skill sets are all so very different for those guys. Benda is very different from Maurice Blackwell. And Leon Galafau, like their bodies types and their frames and even their skill sets are very different in linebacker. So I almost wonder, you know, what the coaches, what their ideal frame and body type and skill set is at that position. Kind of gets to what Doug is asking for here. Do we have those types of linebackers? And I would even throw out there, just for the topic of conversation, linebacker is one of those positions now. You could make the argument, even at the NFL level, it's one of the toughest positions to transition from level to level. Because in high school, you know, your linebackers in high school are very different in terms of their responsibilities and what they need to be in college. And they also need to do everything, right? You got needs to, they need to be forced run defenders, need to be able to drop back in coverage. You need them to be able to cover man to man. You need to be able to blitz. They got to do everything. And I almost wonder if they're becoming like what tight end it has become in the NFL, where you're just looking for great athletes overall and to mold them into being a really good linebacker. And we've seen that at Texas. We've seen it in the Big 12 a lot. Now, I don't know if it's exclusive to the Big 12's ecosystem, but we've seen a lot of Big 12 developmental projects at linebacker coming out of high school developed into really good linebackers who just have really good football IQ, and they're just damn good football players. What are your overall thoughts about that? Because I think it is an interesting conversation. Texas right now got a good track record with DeMarvion Overshown, Jalen Ford, heading to the NFL. Is this something that Texas is on the right track on, or is this something that Texas may need to update their methods in recruiting and development at the linebacker position?
Well, it's interesting with the linebacking spot in the state of Texas. You know, that's been a spot that's been hit because of the surge of 7-on-7. You know, everybody wants to be a defensive back. The air raid's kind of taken over the big schools in terms of their offenses and the style of play that you go see on a Friday night, you know, across the state. So it's kind of taken away from, you know, your hard-nosed neck roll wearing, you know, I'm going to punch you into the ground or into oblivion linebacker. That was kind of what made Texas football way back in the day, you know, so impressive, you know, and at the high school level. Does Texas have the adequate size for the SEC? I say absolutely. I mean, you have two 240-pound middle linebackers with David Benda and Anthony Hill right now. And I don't think either of them are necessarily – lacking or trading off their speed or athleticism to be at that weight, which is very encouraging. Of course, we know Anthony Hill, five-star guy, kind of one of those freak of talents, right? You know, we know what he can do on the field. David Benda, on the other hand, all I've heard this spring about David Benda is this guy just flies around the field. I mean, he is everywhere from a sideline to sideline perspective. Whether or not he's making the play, he's around the football, which for a middle linebacker guy right next to Anthony Hill, that's what you could, you know, you want that. That's all you can ask for at the point. So for both of them to be 240 pounds and Mo Blackwell to get up to about 222 at the moment, I think you're looking at a linebacking group with enough size, maybe too much size if you add in Kendrick Blackshear in his 263 pound frame coming in. But, you know, Leon Golofao's in the mix now. If you can get, you know, someone like Ty Anthony Smith up to that level, then you're really looking at a healthy core in the linebacking group at the moment. But I think right now Texas is pretty happy with the development of David Benda as a full-time linebacker right next to Anthony Hill so far this spring. That's why I kind of hesitate to see that they'll go out and pursue somebody else at that spot this spring.
Yeah. Let me add to what CJ was talking about with the dearth of linebacker prospects typically in the state of Texas these days, because of the proliferation of the spread. A lot of running backs should be linebackers, in my opinion, in the state of Texas. But they aren't. And they end up being good running backs, but not. They could have been better linebackers, maybe, long term. But a lot of Texas high schools are so offensive-oriented and know they need to score a lot of points. That happens. And so they don't develop linebackers like they used to. In my opinion, you could look and it even translates to recruiting rankings. CJ was talking about that, because I wanted to hit on this, what he was talking about with the high school stuff. There were only three linebackers from the state of Texas last year that were in the top 30 linebackers ranked in the country. Wow. That's the worst by far of any position. By far.
Yeah.
Only other one that ever comes close in that regard on a year-to-year basis is tight end. And last year, Texas really only – there were three in the top 30 in the country. Texas really only wanted two, Justin Williams, who went to Georgia, and Ty Anthony Smith, who went to Texas. They passed on a young man out of Lovejoy, CJ, Peyton Pierce, who went to Ohio State. Texas just didn't think he was a fit for them. And so the lack of linebackers is a play there that I think is important. And then the other piece is it's also cyclical. So this year, there's three linebackers the Longhorns want.
Yeah.
Right? There's not only is there Bo Barnes, who just committed from Skyline, there's Riley Pettijohn, and there's Jonathan Cunningham. And so unlike a lot of positions in the state of Texas, linebacker seems to be one that they just, you don't get the numbers, yeah. right? Mm-hmm. And when you do find a, I mean, look, who's Jalen Ford is from Texas, but Edgerrin Cooper, who was A&M's best linebacker, he's from Florida.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? They're going out of state. When's the last time Alabama or Georgia came to Texas for a linebacker? Well, Georgia did last year, but what about before that? There, those guys, a lot of those NFL linebackers, they're sitting in the SEC states, in the deep South, and they, because I think style of high school football in Texas is different. Down South, they're believe me, they're trying to run the same offenses. They're just not whole hog like the state of Texas is, in my opinion.
Yeah,
which is interesting to see why Texas goes west so often for a linebacker. You know. I think you kind of see a little bit more of a hybrid linebacker that still has those old school tendencies out there, but now with the advancement of the spread, you see them more. You know,
but that's more the West Coast is more West Coast.
Yeah, yeah,
it's not fair. Spread. Now they're hybrids. All the I mean, I get that, but that's actually West Coast offense. West it still has some NFL principles. The stuff that you see in Texas high school football, there's not a ton of.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. It's a good point. No, and I love what you said, Bobby, that some running backs, they need to be linebackers, but they just want to play offense. I've said that about some wide receivers in Texas. I'm like, man, you're so long and rangy. You go play DB, man. You get drafted.
You don't have a bad
that good, and you'll get drafted then, right? They all want to play. They all want to play offense, man. They want to play offense. They want to score points these days. All right. Also, UT boy, thank you very much. Hey, UT boy, you came up today. We were talking about you at the meet and greet. Thank you very much. I appreciate that diaper money, man. It matters. I appreciate that love. You came up today multiple times. Good things, because the family was talking about you as we met at the meet and greet at Posse East. So we had a good time there, and we talked about a lot of the family members there, man. Because you guys always have a good time in the chats there. So we appreciate that, UT boy. You are the man. And yeah, we gotta talk about Jonte Cook for. I mean, somebody give me a Jonte Cook nugget for UT boy. Give me something.
Hey, CJ had some nice things to say about it. CJ had some nice things to say about him.
Yeah, no, this past Saturday scrimmage was amongst the best Jonte's looked in a Texas uniform, I was told. Of course, having the first touchdown of the afternoon, a nice little toe tap on the back end of the end zone in which he beat Jelani McDonald for the score. Nice. Again, just really encouraging. Jonte's been a guy that we've expected to be in the rotation for, you know, that first group of wide receivers this fall. Of course, some of the other names have made a lot of noise. You look at Isaiah Bond, you know about him, Matthew Golden. His soft hands have been mentioned a number of times. And, of course, Ryan Wingo, the freshman coming in, making a lot of noise. Where does, you know, Jonte kind of fall in all of this? Well, he certainly helped himself last Saturday, and I was told it was the best that he's looked this spring, and certainly carrying in the momentum. You know, again, he's one more practice tomorrow morning before lacing up the cleats for, you know, the spring game and really getting after it in front of hopefully a lot of folks out inside of DKR this weekend. I really like what I've heard this past week from Jonte Cook.
All right, there you go. See, I know UT boys like, yeah, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. We talked about that. Nobody a bigger Jonte Cook fan. Appreciate those nuggets, CJ. Let me ask you this. You were just talking about the scrimmage. I was listening to Sark's media availability. And he was talking about the guys that stood out in the scrimmage, and he was naming mostly defensive players. So the follow-up came, hey, so did the defense win the scrimmage? And then Sark was, you know, having a little fun and made a couple of jokes. But essentially he implied that the defense won, you know, kind of what we call team, which is in between the 20s. But in red zone, that the offense, once they won the day in the red zone again, and that was the case also in the first scrimmage. Sark said the same thing in the first scrimmage, that now when it came to the red zone, hey, offense won the day, but defense won their fair share in between the 20s. This is my theory. Is it crazy or not? We're not going to see any of these great red zone concepts in the spring game, by the way. And that the real reason that the red zone has been so successful, by the way, Texas defense is a good red zone defense, but he's broken out some new concepts, some new cheat codes, some new wrinkles in the red zone, because he obsessed over it the entire offseason. You know, he watched every damn red zone rep and was just throwing stuff at the wall. and just, you know, I mean, just upset about a number of different things that Texas really, you know, really kind of shot themselves in the foot on, and that's why they were so ineffective in the red zone. But my theory is that he's broken out a lot of new wrinkles, not a new concepts. That's why the red zone is so successful. In between the 20s, defense winning, because the defense knows Sark's offense. They've been watching Sark's offense for the last 2-3 years. They know Sark's offense. They know what he's trying to achieve. But, man, when them 20s, I think he's pulling out some real funky stuff. And that's a good thing. That's my theory. Am I off here?
Right. You don't think we'll see the behind-the-back pass in the scrimmage?
You might see that. You might see that, yeah, because that ain't it. That ain't part of the new wrinkles he's bringing in. You might see. Oh, CJ must have knocked the camera off. There you go.
And, I hit it right off the TV or right off my stand with that one.
Oh, I remember when Sark did that, man. I remember the social media blowback and outcry was crazy. That this guy's supposed to be a genius, and this is what he came up with. The back was low. Yeah, so the opening script for Sark. Oh, man. That opening script is 40 plays. Don't forget that, guys. It's 40 plays.
I agree with you, Rod. I don't think he's going to try. I don't think he wants to show anything. I'm not so sure that if Sark had his druthers, he wouldn't just go have his 15th scrimmage in the bubble and be done with it. Just so you know, he doesn't need to show anything to anyone, right? No. Now, the spring scrimmage – spring game is more for the fans than it is for the team and some and the coaches, right? Because in reality, you know, I don't know. They're probably going to make Jeff Banks the head coach of one team and Pete Kwiatkowski or something the coach of the other team. And what, you know.
Something silly.
If Sark had a 15th, I guarantee if Sark had a 15th practice, that's not what he would do. He would go work on reps for 2 hours, right? I mean, not any of that hoo-ha that we're going to see a little bit of, a little showmanship on Saturday. I think that from what I'm hearing, they're using a lot more two backs, Rod, which I know is going to be, you know, music to your ears.
Hey.
And so that's what I'm hearing. But to both y'all's points, I thought that the bigger issue in the red zone, accentuates the idea that they need some help on the interior. Maybe the reason they're doing better in the red zone this year is it tweaks. It's no Byron Murphy, no Tavondre Sweat, walk in the middle. I mean, those guys are pretty good in the red zone.
No, you're right. They would.
And so maybe you circle that and say, you know?
Yeah. No, I don't. We won't see any of it, but I hope in the spring game that, hey, Ryan, Sark been listening to Football Theory, Rod B. Strategy. Hey, I'm not saying that Sark listens to me, but great minds think alike, because I will tell you that that two back set is coming. It's coming, guys. It's coming. He's got the same data I got. Oh, we're going to see more of it, no doubt. Let's get to the spring game a little bit. And thank you guys for the questions and super chats. And we'll get to some more of the questions here, because I see a couple of them coming in that are really good ones. So we'll get to that. But let's get to some spring game conversation this weekend about basically what we expect to see and what players, I guess, we expect to be the standout performers in the spring game. If you had to make a top three list, your top three, these are my guys I know are going to be the big topics of conversation after the spring game. We will be talking about these three guys. Who are they for you? These three.
Number one to me is going to be Ryan Wingo. And I think he's going to get a number of different looks, whether it be with the first unit, the second unit, the third, whatever, however they divvy it up. I think he's going to be on the field quite a while. Listen, we saw it last year with Jonte Cook. We knew coming in, Jonte was going to be a very heralded recruit. Under Steve Sarkisian, we certainly saw the deep pass attempts from Malik Murphy to Jonte. We saw the touchdown. I think we're going to see a little bit of that with Ryan Wingo on Saturday as well. Mm. Who else? I think Colin Simmons is also in that boat, because I think regardless of who he's going against, maybe with the exception of a Calvin Banks, he's going to find a way into the backfield and be disruptive. That's all we've heard about Colin Simmons and this edge group so far this spring after each scrimmage. Yeah, that man Colin Simmons is built a little bit different. So the two of them for me, and then you know, if it's anything like last year, Jaden Blue, you know, he's no longer trying to find his role. We know what he can do. We know what kind of speed he's got. I like Jaden Blue there to make another big time play like we saw a year ago.
Like on the porch, Sorrell says 88 will be great Saturday, gentlemen.
I like that.
Hey, I hope he doesn't have any. Hey, I want to say this. How many series do you think he gets, Baron Sorrell?
That's respect by the coaches sometimes when you know, be like, nah, we know what we got in him.
How many series did you play your senior year, your senior spring?
I bet I probably was at like three or four. I probably was maybe like three or four series. And
until you were a 2-year starter. I mean, Baron Sorrell's going to be a 3-year starter.
Starter, man.
He ain't going to play more than – I bet he doesn't play more than 4 series.
I'm with you on that.
He may have a great Saturday, but he's going to do it in like 12 plays.
that's what we need. Splash plays, baby. Splash plays. I think that edge, that edge position period, I think it's going to look different. I think that BGO, even with the guys, obviously Baron Sorrell and Ethan Burke, who've been here, I think the improvement by those guys is going to be noticeable. But I just think, you said it, CJ, the BGO by Colin Simmons, which you're going to see from Trey Moore. We haven't seen that on the 40 acres since Sark has been here. And it's been a while. I think the last time we've seen edge defenders like that, maybe Joseph Osai was probably the last time you saw something like that. And none of these guys are Joseph Osai. I ain't saying that. But, Colin Simmons probably has a higher upside than a guy like Joseph Osai. But you got those guys, those types of players now who have those type of impact players on the edge is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Let me ask y'all this, and this is a question for you too, Rod. Which one of the guys do you think are – like Quinn is like Sorrell. He's not going to play a ton of series, we don't think.
No.
Right?
Exactly.
You just don't do that with a 3-year starter. Who are the guys that – you circle and you say, wow, top 10 pick potentially, top 15
ooh,
pick.
Ooh, wow.
Wingo is a potential, like 3 years down the road.
I got you. Upside.
You're like, he's a little – he's
that silly.
Yeah, Anthony Hill.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. Colin Simmons maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially,
okay.
Yeah.
Yep. Kelvin Banks.
Yep.
Okay. So – look, I'm interested in Arch Manning. Forgot about that. So I would put the ones for me, Arch Manning, Ryan Wingo, and then Colin Simmons / Anthony Hill. Those are all guys.
Yeah.
That I think – Derek Williams might be in there.
Oh, that's good, Daniel. I like that.
Yeah. Trey Moore, I don't know that would be a top 15, top 20. And Manny may or may not run that well. Yep. My point being, top 15 guys, you want to look at that. And Jalen Gilboa's also had a good spring too, guys, by the way. Hey. I know Sark's talked a lot about Manny, and rightfully so too, by the way. I've heard Gilboa's had a good spring, so that might be a guy to watch on Saturday.
Yep.
Bobby, I wanted to get your thoughts on a conversation we had on the winning drive on Monday. About Malik Muhammad and how high of a ceiling he has for the Texas. Yeah. We talked about it. You know, I think he has as high a ceiling as guys like Holton Hill and Chris Boyd. I even said, I think he might eclipse them and go back to some guys in the early 2000s. When it's all said and done, where do you kind of see Malik Muhammad's career shaping up in terms of what kind of player he was, not only at Texas, but in terms of his draft stock, in terms of, where he might end up hearing his name called in the NFL draft one year.
I got to be honest. I want to hear what Rod says, but because it's a corner. But I would say this. He is a better tactician than Chris Boyd or Holton Hill ever were. And he's only a sophomore at Texas. Now, not today where they're in the NFL, okay? But at Texas, Manny Muhammad's already a better tactician than either Holton or Chris Boyd, because they were both really good athletes. Holton Hill still has some of the longest arms of her corner you're ever going to see.
He looked,
But Chris Boyd, remember, he didn't play defensive back full time until he got to Texas. And whereas Manny is, everything I hear from him from behind the scenes isn't so much that he's a football savant or something like that. He just eats it up. Yep. He loves it. And so he's all about it all the time. That being said, is he going to run a 4-4? I don't know. I mean, I don't have a watch on him. And to get in that top 15, like I was just talking about, that group of top 15, Rod, what do you have to run as a corner to get in the top 15 these days? You either have to have really long arms.
Yep. Long arms.
You have to have really long arms.
Yep.
You have to be able to run like the wind. Manny has good long arms.
Yeah.
But he ain't got bonus size like Colton Hill did. And no, so
they want, you're right about that, Bobby. You're right. They want those Patrick Surtain, right? The second, Christian Gonzalez, he's another one. Sauce Gardner. These guys are what, like 6'2", long, rangy guys, all run mid 4.4s or faster.
To be clear though, Tyrann Mathieu wasn't a top 15 pick, I don't think. So no. I mean, now he's a safety, but yeah. my point being, there can be guys that are better ballers than they go as high draft picks.
Yeah,
right. And so maybe Manny Muhammad is that fits that way.
Yeah, I think Manny Muhammad is a technician at man to man coverage. I agree with you, Bobby. He seems like he studies his technique, and he studies the kind of the art of playing press man, but he's naturally a ball centric defender. Like he always thinks ball, even Sark said, got an interception, but also probably had another, what should have been a takeaway, because he's always going after the football, which is why I love. I think some guys have that naturally. They're the ball hawks we discuss. I played with some guys like that, like Nathan Basher. I think his coverage skills though, remind me a little bit of Legarius Sneed. He, in terms of how sticky he can be in coverage, he's one of those sticky guys. And I think Sneed was like a third round pick or something like that. So you can obviously be a really good coverage corner and not be drafted in the top 15, but that's what Bobby's talking about. Does he have that kind of ceiling? Yeah, he's shorter than those guys who would get drafted there. Those guys are usually over 6 foot. If I'm not mistaken, he's right at 6 foot.
My understanding. Yep.
Yeah, so if he's right at 6 foot, you know what he's got to do? Get his hands on a lot of footballs. He's got to be, he's got to have that already on his resume that no, that guy hunts the football. If you throw it in his direction, you are taking a chance. You are taking a hell of a risk, because that if that guy's got sticky coverage, he's going to finish the play. Be known as a finisher, that will get you drafted higher, even if you don't have the size. He's got, I think, long arms, but I don't know if he's got the height that they want ideally for a top 15 corner. Yeah. But
he may be a top 15 player by the end of it. He may not be a top 15 draft pick, CJ, when you're talking about what is his ceiling.
But let me ask you, Bobby, this is the question that we had, though, before. I know we're getting closer. I got a couple of things I want to get into. But he's the best corner, cover corner at Texas, or the best corner at Texas since blank. That's why I think
CJ it's a heavy question, Bobby.
Where'd you go, CJ? You went. I believe we.
I would go Quandre.
Oh, okay.
Quandre.
Yeah, Quandre came in as a corner. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good.
And Quandre had a little baller to him too, right?
Yeah.
Still does. Still does. Yeah. You know, yeah. 12, 15 years later, whatever. Who did y'all have? Because I definitely think he's a better prospect and a better player than Holton or Boyd, certainly at this time of his career.
That's where I went, Bobby. I had Holton Hill originally, and then I said, I think he has a higher ceiling, and that's what got us talking about some of those DBU guys back in the day. Yeah. Coach Shipley was not having it, so that's why I wanted to get your opinion a little bit.
What did he say?
He was like, y'all need to calm down, chump. Hey. We went back to the early 2000s, like, you know, Quentin Jammers and me.
He's not Quentin Jammer now.
No, yeah. I know, but that's when we started. Then, Coach shut that down. He's like, nah. So we stopped at Chris Boyd and Holton Hill because Coach, that's out of respect for Coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fair enough. No, I think, Jammer was, I mean, just he's so big.
You just don't feel like that.
But I mean, I'll say this. I mean, Manny Muhammad has a better nose for the football in the air than Quentin Jammer did.
Well, he's got better hips than Jammer. He's got better hips.
Yeah, Jammer but he's got 6'3" and a super freak with his body. You know,
exactly.
it's, there's a difference. And so
last thing I'll add on it, Malik was or is still the second highest cornerback recruit Texas has signed in the history of all these recruiting rankings since what was it, Curtis Brown in 2007?
So
there's, again, that upside. We've seen, you know, little snippets of it. There's still a lot of reason to expect him to continue that growth and potentially get into that conversation one day, of course. And to Coach Shipley's point, you got to see it. And we got to see it often and consistently.
Hey, thank you, UT boy, for that. Appreciate that. DBU, baby. We're bringing it back. DBU coming back, baby. It's going to be this year or it's going to be the year after. Is Manny Muhammad, we'll end it on this. Is he an all SEC corner this season?
Oh, this season? I don't know about that.
I don't know about this year.
Let's go one round. I know this sounds like a cop-out from my perspective, so I'm supposed to be looking forward to all these teams and breaking them down and all that stuff. But until you see these guys week in and week out,
you don't know.
South Carolina could have somebody that's 6'1", 185 and runs 4'3". And I don't even know he exists. You know, and neither do anybody else until you actually go out and see him. You're like, where'd this guy come from? Yeah. And so until we go one round, I do think that all of us are going to feel that, right? We know what to expect from Kansas State. We know what to expect from Texas Tech. We know what to expect from Oklahoma State on a yearly basis, right? We don't have that with these guys in the SEC. So to say that, can someone be a first-team all-SEC guy? Well, if he gets 5 or 6 picks, yeah, he can. If he gets 2 or 3 picks, he's probably not. And that kind of stuff will end up being as much graded on that. But there also could be a guy out there that Georgia has that could end up being a top 5 pick that we just don't know about.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. No, Georgia's got guys that's a top. They're first round picks that aren't even all SEC guys. They just
they're not even first team guys.
That's how loaded they are. In 2024, the showdown returns, ladies and gentlemen. Texas will take on Texas A&M. Make sure you get the collector's edition. This, folks, is going to be fantastic. First of its kind, celebrating the rivalry returning. Oh, I remember this back in my day playing Texas A&M. Nothing like it. Just use the QR code to get a slice of the Longhorn Aggie history. When you use the QR code, it's just $13.95 with free shipping. So use the QR code to get a slice of Longhorn Aggie history, rekindling of the rivalry this season. And when you use the QR code, it's just $13.95 with free shipping. The showdown returns. There you go. Everybody excited about that showdown as well. They should be. All right. Here is an excerpt. This is from an ESPN article with Sark's quotes about the Bama job. And it says here that basically, yes, Sarkisian acknowledged Wednesday the possibility of replacing Saban entered his mind. Naturally, I'd be lying if I said I didn't think about it, he said, but it took me all about 60 seconds to say, yeah, I'm not doing that. I had an awesome 2 years at Alabama and loved my time under Coach Saban, but ultimately you want to reap what you sow. We poured a ton into this program for 3 years and we're on the cusp, I think, of going on a run that will be epic. I believe that our staff does and our players do too. Just the support we have and the culture we've created. Why leave something like that? Stood out to me. We're on the cusp, I think, of going on a run that will be epic. Wow. Epic.
I like that quote.
I love that quote.
That'll make the hair stand up on the back of your neck if you're a Texas fan.
Bobby, I want to get your thoughts on this, because on top of that, but also his first presser since the Sugar Bowl, you know, he dropped that line that he's addicted now, having gotten a little bit of a taste
obsessed
of what it's like to play on the, you know, the national stage for all the marbles. I mean, you've seen a lot of coaches, a lot of successful seasons, a lot of bad seasons. Is he saying what you want? I mean, is this all the right things that you want to hear coming off of 23 and entering 24 of the SEC? I mean, like, that's back-to-back, you know, quote-worthy things right there from Sarkisian. Yes.
Mm-hmm. The answer is yes, CJ. That's what you want to hear.
I mean, yeah.
I want my coach saying that we're on the cusp of going on a run that will be epic. That's what you want. Now, go to Bob Shipley's comment about Manny Muhammad. Now go do it, though. That's right. Let's see it happen. But that's good stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't – look, everybody would have said if Alabama calls, you're gonna at least talk to him and think about it. I mean, why? I mean, you're talking about if you're the head of General Motors and, you know, I don't know, Chrysler calls, you're gonna at least think about it for a second. I mean, it just the way it is. Or if you're at Porsche and Ferrari calls, or vice versa, you're gonna at least think. It's look, I think that he's right, in that you want to see stuff like this through and you have things going in a certain direction. He hasn't shown yet whether or not he can break through at Texas. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And he's not like when Mack Brown came to Texas from North Carolina, Rod, he had won a bunch of 10-game seasons, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he'd kind of gotten stuck in that can't beat Florida State mode. Right.
Yeah. Yep. Oklahoma.
And then, and so he needed a new place.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Steve Sarkisian feels like he needs a new place.
Yeah.
I think he's seen what he can do and how he can do it. And now he just needs to go do it and focus on that.
Yeah. Mac always had that one like impediment, right? It was Florida and Spurrier for a while in there, and then got to Texas. Of course, Oklahoma was a big part of that here at Texas. For Sark, I wonder what that will be. It's either going to be Georgia or it's going to be Kalen DeBoer. Because Kalen DeBoer and him got this weird little history going last two years they played. Now he's at Alabama. I can see that becoming a thing if they, you know, put them back on the schedule, that kind of stuff when that happens. And I also could see just Georgia. If you're going to play right now, you're going to be playing in the SEC title game year after year. And I expect, you know, Texas to be doing that and competing. Georgia's going to meet you in there most of the time. I mean, that's just the way that's why Kirby Smart's got that thing building. So that'll be my, I think you got to conquer those. We'll see this year. He's got a chance to, you know, to face off against Kirby Smart and Georgia. And we'll see how his program matches up against Georgia and what they've done. So that'll be interesting. All right. Thank you, UT Boy, though, for the super chat there. And thank all you guys for the super chats. Here's an interesting question. I know we're getting close to it. So I want to get this in there from QWERTY. Says here about the Joe D. Camillus loss. And I think it's something to keep in mind and talk about. Will Joe D. Camillus be a bigger loss for special teams and game management than people think? You know, one thing we don't talk about a lot because it hasn't been an issue lately, but I think at one point early on when Sark got here, people did discuss a lot. It was, you know, Sark being the play caller and head coach, having a lot on his plate, game management, time management, focusing on, you know, the more holistic view of the entire team as opposed to one phase of the game. But is that something that we anticipate could come back to hunt Texas, the game management? Now that they don't have Joe DeCamillis, who was a 20-year NFL special teams coach and really kind of specialized in game management, time management, who takes on that role now for Texas?
I don't even know that that's decided. My initial reaction would be not going to be missed on the game management part, in my opinion. Yeah. I think I don't know that he was like unbelievable at that. Likely missed on the special team side. I thought that he did a great job with the returners last year. Banks does a lot with coverage, right, Rod?
Mm-hmm.
And just overall return game. He actually, DeCamillus actually worked a lot with the returners individually. And I thought he did a real good job at that.
Yeah.
That's good. That would be my take on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's good stuff there. We don't talk enough about special teams, but certainly has been a strength for Texas and helped them win some games in this Sark era, no doubt about that. Before we get ready to close this thing out, I do want to thank our fantastic sponsor once again. And also, this is something that you guys need to know. If you are excited about the game in Ann Arbor this upcoming season, which we all are, and you'd like a chance to win $4 tickets to the Big House this fall against Michigan in honor of the 4 national championship that Texas claims, hopefully 5 in the near future. How about this? You can get $4 tickets courtesy of our good friends at the Autograph app. Now these tickets are retailing for around $600+. So if you wanted these tickets at that $4 value, which is bargain basement prices, all you got to do is download the Autograph app and also successfully refer a friend to the Autograph app. Now, on April 18th at 2 p.m., the Autograph app are going to drop two tickets, a pair of tickets to the Texas-Michigan game into their app. All you need to do to be eligible is refer a friend successfully, and you'll have until April 18th at 11 a.m. Central Standard Time to do so. And if you do it by then, you'll be eligible, and then you can find out later whether you're the lucky person to end up winning the $4 tickets to the Texas-Michigan game. For those that are new, Autograph is where real Longhorn fans get unreal rewards by bringing fan content and communities into one place. Autograph is the first app that recognizes and rewards fans, turning their passion into access and experiences. Co-founded by the GOAT Tom Brady on the belief that devotion should be rewarded and the future of fandom belongs to the fans. Scan to download the free Autograph app in the Apple App Store and use the referral code ON Texas. That's the referral code ON Texas. Join us and see where your fandom takes you, hopefully Ann Arbor this fall, with a $4 ticket to the Texas-Michigan game. So thank you very much to our friends over at the Autograph app. Oh, since we're also throwing out messages here, don't forget you want to become a OTFOG, an On Texas Football OG. We want you guys to become an OTFOG. Join us over at ontexasfootball.com. We're running a special right now that's $20 off an annual subscription to the site if you use the code OTFOG, that's OTFOG, for $20 off. Instead of a $60 a year, it's just $39.95, or you can get a monthly subscription for just $5.95. For more insider news on the team and recruiting, make sure you check out ontexasfootball.com and become an OG. All right, there you go. Let's get to, we got a couple of more questions here, but I want to get to this nugget from Dane Brugler just really quickly. Before we get to some of these questions. Okay. I don't know exactly where these scouts and everything are getting their information from, because there's some weird information circulating about even AD Mitchell. But Dane Brugler is as reliable as it gets, and he's a pretty reliable source. And Dane Brugler did a podcast, and basically an athletic podcast about the draft and about a lot of the draft eligible players, and he was talking about T'Vondre Sweat, and apparently he said T'Vondre Sweat was pushing 390 pounds during the college football playoffs, which is shocking if that is indeed the case. I don't even know how that's like. I have no idea. Like, that's by the way, Marcus Mosier, I believe I got the tweet from, but he says, one quick note from the Dane Brugler, from Dane Brugler on the Athletic Football Show: Texas D tackle T'Vondre Sweat was pushing 390 during the college football playoffs. All right.
He may have been. I want to say this, though. In this case, this is something that CJ, you and I talked about today. We were talking about Bill Norton, the defensive tackle at Arizona, and then that led us into this whole discussion of, well, where is that? Who is Bill Norton like on the Texas team? I said Vernon Broughton, all this other stuff, okay? The long and short of it, let me give you the fact that our friend T'Vondre Sweat played almost 100 more plays last year than Byron Murphy. What do you think about that? Byron Murphy, 373 snaps. T'Vondre Sweat, 434 snaps. So I don't know what weight he was playing at, but he's playing a lot. You know, I mean, so I think that things like weight and everything, Rod, gets thrown around. 40 time gets thrown around like it was with Danny Muhammad.
Yeah.
But where's production fit? I mean, T'Vondre, 434 snaps last year. That's a lot.
He's a game breaker.
Well, that's a game breaker. That's a lot of snaps for a defensive
back. That is a lot of snaps. That's a lot of snaps. I didn't realize that. Yeah.
Yeah. I guess with T'Vondre Sweat, and whether he was playing at that weight or not, you could go back and dissect the Washington film and say maybe he didn't have the explosiveness or whatever. But if he was pushing 370 or 380 at times during the season a year ago, and he was still the best interior defensive lineman in the country. I mean, Rod, imagine what these NFL teams can do if you get him down to 360 or even 355 and you get him a little bit more agility down there. I mean, of course, we know how talented of a player he is. He had a number of fourth down stops, whether it be against Alabama, Rice, TCU at times, had the game-winning, you know, deflection at the line of scrimmage against Kansas State. This guy, when Texas needed a play on the interior of their defensive line, more times than not, it was T'Vondre Sweat putting his, you know, kind of fingerprints all over that play to disrupt it behind the line of scrimmage. So if that's the knock, is that he played too heavy last year and he still won some hardware from it, I think if you get him down to the desired weight, then his ceiling rises quite a bit.
Yeah, the negative reports about him, and obviously some of his bad decisions are a big part of this as well. But they pushed his draft stock, guys, down to day three. A lot of people saying that he's going to be a third-round pick now. And a day three, potentially even a drop out of the third round. Mel Kiper and Phil Yates did a three-round mock draft recently, and they did not have T'Vondre Sweat in their first three rounds. So somebody's going to get a hell of a value really, really late in the draft, and he's one of those guys I can see a team trading up to go get T'Vondre Sweat because he would be perfect for specific team systems. And if he starts falling in the draft like that, I can see a team saying, well, I'm not going to let him get past, you know, the middle of the third round. I'll take him. We'll take him. He's whatever risks are involved, they're well worth it at this, you know, at this spot in the draft, the value that you get for a guy like that. So, all right. It's about time for us to wrap these things up, guys. We appreciate all of your, sorry. My bad. I missed the super chat. I apologize. My bad, Aloha Traveler. It came in a little late. I apologize. I missed it. All Sark needed was some room to breathe. Last year gave him some clout and some shine. Now he can walk into any room in the U.S. and have something to sell. An obsessed coach who can recruit with anybody. I've said this several times, and thank you for the super chat, Aloha Traveler. Once again, I wish I was where you are right now. But I've said this before, and I've said it to CJ. I don't know how you negatively recruit against Texas now. I remember the last 15 years, and it seemed relatively easy for teams to negatively recruit against Texas. They weren't developing guys into being NFL players, at least consistently. They weren't competing for championships consistently. And they couldn't make the claim that they were the best football program in the state of Texas. They couldn't even really make that claim. They could kind of say, but you couldn't really say, no, defendant, we're the best football program in the state of Texas, period. And now they can, now with the NIL, you know, obviously the NIL laws being the law of the land now, and the transfer portal bringing, you know, free market, you know, freedom for a lot of these players, I don't see a way to negatively recruit against Texas now. Like, I don't know what the pitch is. It used to be easy. Now it's just not. It's not easy.
Hey, Rod, they always do this, and you know this. They pick one little thing that they think they're better at than somebody else and kind of just accentuate. They take that one little needle and try to weave it in this thread into this big thing because they actually overwhelmingly aren't as good. And so they try to find that one little thing that they have a little in, and then that little crevice, they try to break it open and get into a recruit's head. But you're right. I mean, look, there's a reason when Texas is a hot school, it's scorching hot.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Because you don't get that at TCU, right? You don't get that. You just don't. When Texas is hot, there's a reason it's as hot as it gets. Yep. And you're just talking about all those things. Not only is it the school, it's or the academic rank, it's the fact that it's in Austin, Texas, the state capital.
Yeah.
There's so many different reasons why. Number one, you know, flagship university of the state, all those things.
Totally agree. CJ, Burnt Horns here has a recruiting question. Says James Simon coming in this weekend, Jordan Davidson looking less likely.
Yeah, James Simon is coming in. He will be making it for the spring game this weekend. He's the running back out of Calvary Baptist, Louisiana. That's out of Shreveport. Really talented football player. Again, this in a normal season, I think this is a guy that ends up at LSU and that Brian Kelly offense, with LSU already having commitment at, from the moment from Harlan Berry. Now things are looking a little bit more open for James Simon. He was at Notre Dame a week ago. He visited LSU, Alabama, Texas A&M in the spring. Texas is this weekend before getting back up to Louisiana Tech a week from now. Texas is interested. They've kind of kept them on the burner as time has gone on this spring. Of course, Jordan Davison was on campus a week ago. His official visit is locked in as well. For James Simon, the key will be locking in that official visit and getting him back to campus for the that June official visit month. But right now, he's one to watch, of course, coming on to campus this weekend with Ricky Stewart, who is on campus as well. The two of them on campus with Sarkisian, Tashard Choice, Kyle Flood, that whole offensive staff, also getting to see what they can do on the field. That'll be really important.
They had James Simon on last year and really liked him. They had him in a camp too. That's the impetus of the interest there too. They've been recruiting him. I do think that Jordan Davison is an interesting situation still. I don't think they're all out on that by any means.
Right.
Okay, guys. A couple other quick little nuggets questions here before we get out of here. Antoine wants to know, CJ, I'm sure this is, what's up with the 26 tight end Javion Martin from Pflugerville?
Yeah, really talented tight end prospect out of the 2026 class. You don't see too many of them from the Central Texas area. Of course, USC got a good one out of Lake Travis a few years ago, but you don't see them too often up here, especially out from the Pflugerville area. He visited Texas a week ago. We got to talk to him a little bit afterward. He talked to our Jerry Hamilton, said the visit went well. He's building that relationship with Jeff Banks. I would not be surprised to see him again in June for a junior day if Texas has a weekend up that they share with the official visitors. He's a really talented prospect. And again, what's very important here is Texas is taking care of their backyard, making sure that they're stopping by every school that we saw happen in the January contact window. And we'll see again in May when teams start firing up for spring football once again. Texas is very high on his list at the moment.
Good stuff, CJ. Two more before we get out of here. It's a countdown. Casey wants to know, and is there any info from our side regarding the TCU D tackle that entered? Sorry if already asked. Thank you, Casey.
Yeah, absolutely. So Dominic Williams was a freshman All-American as a true freshman last year, sophomore year at TCU. Will be a junior this year. Apparently in the portal are already going in. We were at the thing today, and so I came right over here from that. So I don't know all of the situation there. I do know this. I am hearing that he may be at the OU spring game this weekend, and Texas is trying to get him in the following week. So I think Texas is going to go hard on Dominic Williams. They should, because I think he fits exactly what this defense needs. I mean, he is a nose tackle, 325, 330 pounds, can handle two guys and can anchor. This would be a yes.
This is a yes.
Yeah, this isn't a maybe. This isn't a, they could use him maybe if he, maybe he'll be third team or maybe. This isn't Trill Carter either, by the way. He's a rung above that. So just to give you all a sense.
Nice. I like that. And this is actually a good one, too. Jameson Washington wants to know, is it possible for the spring game to be rescheduled if the weather is obviously too extreme? I don't know if I've ever heard of a spring game being rescheduled anyone across the country. Because like Bobby says, coaches don't want to do them anyway. Look for any excuse to get out of it. They're like, oh, weather. Oh, sorry, guys. We'll have the guys go sign autographs for 3 hours. I'm sorry about that.
We're healthy. Hey, rain can't hurt me, So no, I don't think there will be.
Yeah, I don't think there will be either. And they do so much. Chris Del Conte does so much around the stadium now.
Yeah, exactly.
With the Bevo Boulevard, and that kind of makes it that. So if they did it, you're not going to be able to re-get all those people out there, and it wouldn't be the same type of atmosphere.
Yeah.
I don't know what Sark would do. I mean, I literally don't. I think that if he had his druthers, and I said this earlier, he'd probably just go have a practice indoors at the indoor facility. Work them out, have it go, be done. you know, go on to recruiting, because they've got a, to CJ's point about the guys coming in this weekend, they got a big recruiting weekend and the portal's open. I mean, he's getting ready to, and they're getting ready to go out on the road for recruiting. Yeah. Once April 15th happens, they're going on the road to recruit this coming week.
Yeah.
The coaches can't, you know, it's hard to be two places at once.
That's true. All right. Might as well just get the last one in. Bobby, what good Longhorn books on your shelf back then? Nick wants to know.
What do you say?
A good Rob, recommendation.
Freddie Steinmark, y'all were having that. I saw it last night. He wrote a book that was probably one of the best I've read. That was a self, you know, an autobiographical situation around his cancer.
Wow.
And the situation about how he discovered it, how he went through the whole process, how the team rallied around him, how he found, I can't remember the name of the book itself. And somebody on here, just look up Freddie Steinmark book.
Okay.
It was really, really good. Meat on the Hoof was one that was tremendous as a expose on Texas football in the 70s. Huh. Courage Beyond the Game. Is that Jim Dent? That's not it. This is by Freddie. Freddie wrote it. The one that I'm thinking of, Matt Hutchison, our producer, pulled that up. But the other one was Meat on the Hoof, which was an expose of mid-70s college football excess that just focused on the Longhorns from a Longhorn player.
Okay.
But the Freddie Steinmark one, it goes beyond, like, Rod, you know the typical one is you follow a team throughout their – is that there it? Is.
Yep.
That may be it.
That's it.
That may be it. I can't tell. My point with you guys is it just goes beyond that typical, I'm going to follow the team from the beginning of the season to the end of the season. Yeah. That's the typical Texas book. And I'm not mad about it. I mean, there's some good ones in there. One Heartbeat that Kirk Bowles wrote was one of my favorites back in the day. But that one just hit a little different for me.
Nice. I like that. Good recommendation there. All right. Thank you guys for all your participation. Great fan participation day. So we appreciate all you guys. Want to say thank you to my man Matthew behind the scenes. He is the real MVP. None of this would be possible without him. He's great. Do want to thank our sponsors once again. The Autograph app. Want to thank them for all of their support. Don't forget OTFOG. You want to make sure you check that out. You want to be an OTFOG. Trust me on that. Lots of perks to it. So go check it out. Use the coupon code. Yeah, you go. OTFOG at OnTexasFootball.com. I want to thank my man Bobby for doing a great job. Thank you, CJ, for all of your hard work. And thank all you guys out there for just being a part of the family, man. We're growing this thing, and we are really happy where it's going. And thank you guys all for coming out to the Posse East. Everybody who came out there for our meet and greet, really appreciate it. So thanks all that. We appreciate all you guys. All right, until next time, we'll be talking Texas football, of course, on Texas Football tomorrow. Bobby, what do you have coming up?
We got coffee and football early tomorrow morning. Jerry Hamilton is resting his voice after talking so much this afternoon, having a little, I think he's having a little hay fever too. And then you've got football theory, I think. And then you've got winning drive with Coach Shipley and CJ coming up. We should have, by the way, I will say this, there should be some more portal stuff coming tomorrow. Just a all little right. waiting to see what exactly transpires. But I think that's around the corner. I'll put it that way.
All right. Sounds good. Busy day on Texas football tomorrow, as it is every day. So we appreciate you guys. And until next time, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. Hook 'em.